Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives you expert solutions for your transactional banking needs. That's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Good evening. Welcome to The Money Show. You may notice that there is no traffic report, and that is because there's no traffic. Being classed as useful, I don't remember the exact term, but because media is classed as being important in the process of communicating and hopefully amusing and entertaining, essential, that's what we are, and we're an essential service, we are allowed to travel, and but from home to work and back. It's like being a teenager and being told, you go to the party and you come home. And so it's very important that we stick to that, and we will do so in our quest to keep you informed and hopefully entertained. And we do it proudly and understand that you are stuck at home and you are complying with the requirements of the legislation, which says that you should stay at home. There have been some cases today of people just blatantly ignoring the law, where people have just taken to the streets and tried to get transport and stuff. And I think it's to be expected, particularly in the early days of a lockdown. And then people are going to get mouthy with security forces, and that's going to upset security forces. And we're going to get incidents that are going to happen, and that's also normal. But we need to just not overreact. And if your neighbor is walking their dog, have a word. Don't shout. It's not nice. I've got a colleague who has a fiance who was standing on his balcony today, shouting at people going past, shouting. Being very cross. But it was only a question of time before we recorded our first COVID-19 deaths. And those sadly happened overnight into this morning in South Africa today. Two women, 28 and 48, one in a government hospital, the other in a private hospital. The virus doesn't care who you are. It doesn't give a damn whether you're a trust fund kid or whether you're somebody who, through no fault of your own, became homeless. The virus is indiscriminate. How privileged you are, how poor you are, how rich you are, how important you think you are, it doesn't give a damn. It's deadly, it's real. And I love today's editorial in The Citizen, and I'm going to read you this editorial, the whole thing, just in case you missed it. Stay at home. Full stop. Best editorial I think I have seen in this crisis. That's it. We're in a state of emergency. And those old enough to remember will remember newspapers with the bits blacked out with the news that you weren't allowed to read until P.W. Botha then got his securocrats onto it, and the government of the day banned that very clever trick. But it's evocative of that state of emergency for completely different reasons and for far more positive reasons. And that positive reason is we've got to beat the virus. So everything you need to know in a single editorial. Stay at home. Full stop.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702. For the curious.
Welcome to The Money Show on this Friday evening. Gary McNamara standing by. He is locked down in isolation for the duration. He's our market commentator this evening. The JSE is trading. We'll pick up on some of the big stories there today. We'll also catch up with Gidon Novick, who's doing interesting things in helping underserviced poor communities get access to food. But first, Kevin Lings. He is the chief economist at Stanlib Asset Management, on the line to us from a bunker in Johannesburg. Kevin Lings, bunker not because of COVID-19, but bunker because we've got Moody's scheduled to make a pronouncement on our credit rating tonight. And it's been so busy, so noisy, and so distracting for the last month that we've forgotten about the credit grade rating.
Evening, Bruce. That's right. The virus has certainly dominated all the discussion, certainly all the market movements. But yes, in the background, we're waiting for Moody's to give us a credit rating update. They said it would be today, this evening. It typically would be quite late this evening because they wait for the New York markets to close. So it's difficult to know exactly what time it would come out, but in the recent past, it's been out at around 11, 12 o'clock our time at night. They don't have to actually do the credit rating. They can decide to simply ignore it and postpone it to another time. They can simply do a review of South Africa but not deal with the rating, or they can decide now's the time to make the rating adjustment. So they've got some choices. I was looking yesterday at the Moody's website, and gee, they've downgraded a lot of entities in the last 24 hours, all related to the impact of COVID-19. A lot of those, obviously, companies around the world, but it's suggesting that Moody's is systematically adjusting their credit ratings down because of the impact of COVID-19. So at this stage, given that our numbers and our fiscal parameters are clearly going to deteriorate very sharply, because we're now in lockdown and therefore effectively going to be in a deep recession, logically you would anticipate that we're going to get downgraded.
It makes complete sense. I mean, I love the optimistic view, and you've touched on it. Lots of people have been expressing it, you know, oh no, maybe they'll give us a pass again. I mean, these guys have been giving us a pass for the last 4 years. They've been incredibly patient. They've been incredibly generous. Tito Boweni, in designing the budget in February, did the most Moody's proof budget that he could. It still required big negotiations with trade unions to mitigate the impact of public sector wages, which have run out of control in recent years. And even under those circumstances, all things being equal and under the best possible scenarios for South Africa on the basis of that budget, we still were at risk. The game, however, has changed fundamentally in the last 2-3 weeks.
That's right. So now we're looking at a deep recession in South Africa. Most people now have a decline in GDP somewhere between 4 and 5% for 2020 for the year as a whole. At the moment, I'm sitting on minus 4.9% GDP. We're looking at a tax revenue shortfall that exceeds last year. Last year was a revenue shortfall of 63 billion rand. We're saying that this lockdown plus the weakness in the economy gives us another big tax revenue. You can just imagine how little VAT we're collecting at the moment, how little fuel levy we're collecting, all kinds of things. And then obviously government's going to be spending more money, partly on as a result of the lockdown, partly just generally as safety nets, etc. So all of that's probably going to push our budget deficit, which was forecast at 6.8%, minus 6.8% of GDP, closer to 10% of GDP. So these numbers are all going to deteriorate very sharply. Obviously, we were vulnerable with the previous set of numbers that the Minister of Finance presented. This would take us over the top. So there is an argument that says, you know, this has all come about because of COVID-19, and that it's not due to our own doing. This is an external factor. We didn't do this ourselves. But in the end, the rating agency has to reflect the risk. What is the risk of investing in South Africa? And clearly, whether it's to do with us or not, the risks are now gone up. Yeah. And I can't see how the rating agency doesn't reflect that in the credit rating, no matter what the source of that deterioration is.
It's horrible. It's not our fault. This part isn't our fault. We've actually, I mean, if you just look at government's reaction, it's been, you know, very, very strong, very effective. The leadership around the lockdown, the leadership against declaring a state of emergency, all of this stuff has been impeccably managed. It really has. We've seen government put its best foot forward in this process. But it doesn't change the facts. And the facts are that South Africa's finances are in a worse position today than they were a month ago, and they're going to be in a worse position 6 months from now. And that raises the risk of investing in South Africa. Moody's will have to reflect that. So then, consequences. What does this look like on Monday morning?
So there's actually, strangely enough, there's a big bit of good news. Well, I suppose in the short term, it's good news.
Anything! throw me a life ring. I'm in an ocean being tossed and about to drown.
So the big concern with the credit rating was that we would be excluded from the global bond index. And by being excluded from the global bond index, quite a number of foreign investors would become effectively forced sellers of South African bonds and have to exit South Africa very shortly. And obviously, that would put the currency and the bond market under substantial pressure. What the index has decided, the managers of the index, is that they will only rebalance that index in a month's time. So what it means is that if we are downgraded this evening, instead of us being kicked out of the index effectively overnight or by the end of the month, they're going to only rebalance in a month's time, which means we would remain in the index for another month, which means that you don't immediately suddenly have a huge amount of foreigners that have to exit. Obviously, in a month's time, you will be rebalanced out of the index, in which case there will be that exit then. But you could argue, I guess, that perhaps the situation's a little bit more stable in a month's time, I don't know, and that maybe the exit is a little bit more orderly. So we're not expecting that there would be a huge amount of activity as a result of this rating, primarily because the index only is rebalanced later on. And the currency's already, it already reflects a huge amount of weakness. The bond market reflects that. So we may not be too harshly penalized in the markets, even if we are downgraded, at least in the short term.
Final question briefly. I mean, this does go a long way to explain why, another reason why the Reserve Bank intervened in bond markets this week, because if there are people wanting to sell bonds and nobody wants to buy the things, the South African government will step in and buy those bonds. I suspect that's one of the parts of the thinking of the Reserve Bank this week.
That's right. So we've seen foreigners become net sellers of South African bonds in recent weeks, actually very substantial net sellers. Obviously, South African investors are not particularly keen on holding those bonds, partly because of the likely deterioration in the economy and government finances, partly because of the credit rating. So the market has become a lot less liquid, and there have been some very serious concerns this week as to how the market's trading and whether or not the market actually freezes, etc. So to the Reserve Bank's credit, they stepped in and provided liquidity. They did purchase government bonds in the secondary market. They did print money in order to purchase those bonds. So in the short term, yes, it's providing some backstop for that market as kind of think of it as emergency funding to try and get the market to function. And obviously you don't want to go through a credit rating downgrade with your bond market freezing up. That would be catastrophic in terms of pricing. So it's necessary that there's enough liquidity in the market to see us through that. And I'm now confident that the Reserve Bank will manage that over the short term. Longer term, there are other implications. But I think for the moment, we've got to deal with the current potential fallout.
Thank you very much to Kevin Lings, Chief Economist at Stanlib Asset Management. Moody's ratings announcement this evening. It's very hard to see how they give us yet another pass. On to Gidon Novick, the chair at SA Harvest. You do lots of different things, Gidon. What is your head SA Harvest barrow? What hat are you wearing this evening?
Bruce, we started this thing about 6 months ago. I think the timing couldn't have been better. It's a non-profit organization that really aims to rescue food. In other words, find food that would have gone to waste, that is still good quality food prior to that food expiring, and getting it into the hands of people that really need it. Some crazy stats in South Africa. About a third of all food produced ends up going to waste. That's a global stat that South Africa has as well. And over 10 million South Africans that are undernourished. And in the environment that we're in right now, those numbers are going to increase. And we've got to step up our efforts to find this food and get it into the hands of people that need it.
Are you able to continue operating in our current environment? Are you regarded as an essential service? I would hope that you would be.
Yes, absolutely. We got our official certificate today. Brilliant. So we are absolutely operating.
Your normal sources of food, I mean, restaurants, retail still operating, but airlines, we've got no airlines flying, so there's no food sort of being pushed into towards your system there. I mean, is it too much to suggest that people have hoarded food and that food runs the risk of spoiling can make a contribution, or is the logistics around that just too complicated?
It's difficult to do it at a household level, as much as we'd love to, and as much as people in those households would love to contribute their food. We need to do it in a bulk fashion. We need lots of food. We need to do it. We need to preserve the cold chain and make sure that it's hygienically managed and transported. So we are looking right now to work extensively with the retailers. They're obviously trading. They're doing a very good trade. Given that, you know, restaurants and other facilities are closed, We're also working with the food producers. You know, they are, have come to the party in a big way. Companies like RCL Foods have been incredibly helpful to us. So we're looking at other sources. Traditionally, we do rely on restaurants and airlines and the like, but we've shifted the model. And yesterday, fortunately, we were able to pick up around 15,000 meals from various suppliers. So
how can we help, Giron? I mean, is there anything anybody can do to assist in this process? Because, I mean, on my way into the office today, certainly on the routes that I follow, people were being very good about not coming into work and not driving around. There were one or two cars, but there were more police cars and traffic vehicles on the road, and traffic officers having a look and saying, we're wondering whether they should stop you and question you, but look purposeful. And I just noticed, you know, unemployed people or homeless people become a lot more visible at a time like this because they're not sheltered behind cars and in traffic and anything else. Lots more homeless people visible at a time like this. They've got nowhere else to go. They need the help. Yeah. So how can we help?
Well, the great thing is, you know, South Africa has an abundance of food. We know that. There's plenty of food for everybody in this country. The shortfall is actually getting it from, you know, from places where it would have gone to waste to people that need it. And that's what we do, and we need funding for that. We do need funding. Our website is saharvest.org. The funding goes to our logistics system, which is trucks, it's drivers. We're also going to have to purchase some food during this time because we're worried that there's not going to be enough waste. So we're just gearing up really to try and lighten the load on many people that are going to be feeling it hard.
Giron Novick, thank you very much. The chair at SA Harvest this evening and doing great work. I mean, Giron Novick has got many commercial interests, but this is something that he does out of the goodness of his heart. And thank goodness that there are lots of people like Giron Novick who are prepared to make that sacrifice. Thank you, Giron Novick, and best of luck in sourcing the food that people need.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Gary McNamara, Sanlam Private Investments, on the line to us this evening. Good to have you with us, Gary McNamara. We had 3 days of gains. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then reality struck again and we were down 5% or so. But still, we're better off today than we were on Monday, and that's progress.
Yes, Bruce, good evening. It's been a very difficult week or two, to be honest. And as you say, we're giving back about 4.66% today. But it was a better week, but there's still a huge amount of uncertainty out there. And even these moves today in some of the financial sector, just short of 10% down. And it just reflects the uncertainty. People are worried about bad debts. People are worried about balance sheets. People are worried about liquidity. And nobody knows. We're on lockdown for 21 days. We hope we'll be up and running after 21 days, but nobody knows. And this uncertainty, the market generally doesn't like. But as you say, this week, better on the whole, up for the week, 6% on the markets, but it's been up Monday and then down Monday, and then it's been up through the week and then down today again.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical, isn't it, of the pattern of a bear market, a volatile market, a negative market. We've been so used to seeing the general trend of markets up, 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 up. It's only when they fall, we expect them to go, well, okay, they're down now. They'll go up again. And it's not that simple.
No, exactly. And some of the bigger rallies that you see in markets are often happening in bear markets where you see 5-6% rallies. And it's because people are trying to pick the bottom. I think it's very difficult to try and pick the bottom. But I think we've got to acknowledge now that globally we are finished with the bull market and we are in a bear market by the looks of things. And these rallies and falls are a reflection of that. And the uncertainty is there to compound it.
Banking shares and property stocks down today quite sharply. Now, two possible reasons for that, and that is our bond market could get tight again because of a Moody's likely downgrade tonight. I'm sure you concur with Kevin Lings that it's more likely than not. But the other thing that we've got to consider is the increased likelihood of an Edcon failure. Edcon, the retailer, we had Grant Patterson on the radio last night. He broke down. We played the audio from a conference call that he'd made to his suppliers in which he simply said, sorry, we can't pay you. We are going to be short of 800 million rand over the next 3 weeks because that's the amount of sales we do in 3 weeks. And when we open up, there's no guarantee that we'll continue. We may have to go to business rescue. Banks are the big shareholders of Edcon. And Edcon is one of the biggest tenants of retail space in South Africa. This is significant.
Absolutely, Bruce. And I think there's been a trend, particularly on the property side, and we're seeing it in the financials and now with the risk on bad debts, and you mentioned Edcon, is that people are using less and less space on the property side. So that would have been some of the fall off on the property side. But the financials, there's no doubt the bad debts and Edcon in particular is a concern. We've got the Moody's downgrade potentially, and I don't think we're in any better fiscal position than we were a month ago. But we'll wait and see. But there's also a lot of that uncertainty reflected in our bond prices. If you see, you know, 10-year on the RSA government bonds, we're getting 11.5% yield here, whereas the rest of the world is at very low yields. And I believe once the dust settles, people are going to be looking for yield, and certainly South Africa is an attractive place. So I think we are reflecting some of that bad news on the Moody's downgrade. And with COVID-19, it's as bizarrely as it sounds, it's a bit of a sideshow, but it certainly has had an impact on the financials today. They also were quite big beneficiaries yesterday of the rally. And the property stocks, I think, have got some challenges ahead, although a lot of that is reflected in these prices. You know, a lot of these property stocks are down 60% year to date, and they were quite weak last year. So it's been a tough environment.
Gary McNamara in a bear market. Happy hibernating. Sanlam Private Wealth's Gary McNamara on the line to us this evening, wrapping up today's markets. Yep, yesterday's gains basically wiped out. Still, we are up on the week. And after the previous 2 weeks, that takes quite a lot of saying.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that has the bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity.
Welcome to The Money Show this evening. Time now for the best bits of The Money Show, and it's been a tumultuous week. And my producer said, we must play the Graham Patterson interview again. I said, you know what? Everyone has listened today to the Graham Patterson interview. Thousands of you were listening to it today, and I'm so pleased that you did, because we need to grasp the reality of this crisis that we're going through. Weak companies are going to crumble. Weak companies are going to fail. Tens of thousands of people will lose their jobs as a result. This is not a rehearsal. This is reality. And had I known that all it would take to get so many thousands of you listening to clips of The Money Show, I would have cried many years ago. I would have made my guests cry. In fact, I think we're going to introduce a requirement that if your results are bad, you're going to be forced to cry. No. In all seriousness, your response has been amazing, and thank you for that response. Well, it's been such a busy week, and the South African Reserve Bank made an unprecedented move this week to buy government bonds in order to inject liquidity into markets amid the COVID-19 crisis. And ahead of tonight's Moody's announcement, there is no doubt that the government is preparing for the sales of South African bonds, and they will buy those bonds if required. This is seen as different to quantitative easing, and I spoke to the Deputy Governor at the Reserve Bank, Fundi Chazibane, yesterday, and she explained how this decision came about.
This decision, of course, is delegated to the Deputy Governor responsible for markets, but as with all other organizations, one does do consultation. So together with the Financial Markets Department, that is responsible for running the daily monetary policy operations of the bank.
Okay, so I mean, did you go to the governor? Did you go, Governor Khanyako, I'm about to do this, do you mind? Or did you say, Governor Khanyako, I'm doing this, we need to do it?
So the way it would go, Bruce, is we have market dysfunctionality. What are the options that we have? Okay. The SARB has got a toolkit that we utilize to provide liquidity in the market or to drain liquidity from the market. So it's a toolkit that we've been talking about enhancing, and it offers a number of tools. Some of that includes debentures that the Reserve Bank offers to the market. We offer these on a weekly basis. So this is an operational function. What is unique is that we are seeing signs of market dysfunction right now. And so we are responding to correct that level of dysfunctionality. But if you think about what we do on a day-to-day basis, as a Reserve Bank, we are active in the market in terms of ensuring that markets function, and also that we utilize these tools to add liquidity or drain liquidity from the market in order to ensure that the decision that the Monetary Policy Committee takes is transmitted into the market.
Fundi Chazibana. Thank you very much indeed. She's a deputy governor at the Reserve Bank. Well, we chatted to Sipho Phatshana this week. The chair of Business Unity South Africa is also the chair of AngloGold Ashanti. And he was talking to us about how important it is for the business sector to work with government. And there has been the most astonishing and gratifying and satisfying collaboration between government and the private sector. That's what it's called. The government and the private sector in so many respects. And government has been taking guidance in very big meetings that have been happening behind the scenes, the details of which I don't think we'll ever be familiar with. But I'm told that government has been very receptive, that business has been offering its services. And this week we heard, so many donations coming to the fore, led by the Ruperts and the Oppenheimers. I see the Patrice Motsepe Foundation is having a media briefing tomorrow. We'll see what comes out of that. But certainly South Africans are coming to the party on this thing like nothing ever before. Have a listen to Sipho Phatshana.
We got to this point, having looked at what happened in other jurisdictions, looked at the trends, looked at what happens when you delay by a day or two. Government has been very deliberate in its interventions here, and this is uncharted waters. None of us have done this before, but the sense that we have is that government is honest about what it knows and what it doesn't know, draws on the resources of both local and international people to enable it to make intelligent decisions and choices around this. We have incredible confidence in the decisions taken, so we feel that as business, we can line ourselves up behind it. So the key focus for us now is that, of course, we are worried about what the implications of all of this are going to be for the economy and what are going to be the social dimensions of this thing. So we have 9 working groups drawn from different sectors: security of supply chains, import substitution, in the event that we may not be able to access certain products, we must be able to generate and produce those within the country, assuming that this thing is with us for an extended period. What happens to SMEs if no intervention is made? You could very well have serious decimation of SMEs in the period of the next 100 days. So you need to put certain intervention to make sure that you mitigate the impact. But there would be adverse impact, and we don't want to make promises to anyone, and I don't think government is making promises to anyone that...
No, well, you can't make promises, Sipho Phatshana, but I mean, there's the intent to help, but we don't have the budgets of America, we don't have the budgets of Denmark and Norway, we're not going to be able to bail out small businesses to the extent that you're seeing in other parts of the world. That's tragically real. But measures are being put in place, the very best we can do. Private school and tertiary prior education provider, Advitech, saw a 16% rise in revenue. And the company was saying, oh, look how good we are. Look how clever we are. Look at our rise in revenue. And I had quite a tough conversation with Roy Douglas, the chief executive of Advitech, saying, we've now entered into a situation that nobody could have anticipated, other than Bill Gates and a couple of other smart people, but we didn't know when it was going to hit. And suddenly, households are going to have cash crunches. People are going to lose money to pay for school fees. What are private school companies doing to cut fees, particularly if we go to an extended period where parents are going to be expected in privileged schools to carry the burden of teaching at home via learning mechanisms that are not going to be perfect by any stretch of the imagination? My household was fortunate enough to experience a little bit of online learning in the last couple of days, and it's chaos. It's not for the record from Advitech, but this is Roy Douglas. It gets a bit fruity.
We are geared to deliver, and then I think there's a steep learning curve on the part of everybody, by the way, not only those at home who are receiving the information to make the adaption, but for those who are delivering.
Yeah. Can you keep justifying the increasingly adventurous school fees that private school companies are leveling on their parents? Because the process isn't the same. The learning process isn't the same. There's a greater demand on parents to actually do the educating and the teaching despite the very best efforts of the school. Is it going to get to a point possibly where you have got to say to parents, we respect the fact that you're actually losing income because you're staying at home doing our job for us, because you pay us to do that job. We can't keep charging you however much it is that we're charging you per month to do this.
We've been mindful of the cost of private education, which has escalated dramatically. And in fact, one of the issues that's concerned...
No, we're quite tight on time. I'm curious as to whether or not it's a scenario for you that you say to parents, we appreciate this, we're not giving you the service that you're paying for. Yes, we're helping educate your kids, but it's not the same discount of 50% or whatever it is for the period of coronavirus.
Well, Bruce, I think that's a risky. You know, at the end of the day, we have quality and caliber education, that's a no, Roy.
I mean, is that unequivocal? Because yeah. you've got to start losing kids. Parents won't be able to afford to keep their kids in private schools anymore.
Well, Bruce, I think if we go to that scenario, then of course it's a completely different setup altogether in terms of the whole of society. At the moment, we're planning on the immediate future and bridging the gap, and we do believe that with the actions taken that, you know, we're not sure how long it will take, but I think that we will come through and get past this. I think talk of that nature is quite dangerous because, of course, you know, parents are expecting to have quality educators providing input. And yes, the offering is different.
Mary Metcalf today, and she knows her stuff, is talking today of big postponements to education. We could lose a year in education if we can't contain this virus. I mean, this is serious stuff.
Of course, you're absolutely correct, and I don't want to minimize the risk at all, but I'm also think that, you know, we have to find a way for children to lose a year of education. You know, it does depend upon which grades. I mean, that is really serious consequences, and I think we need to bring whatever efforts we can to bear to make sure that we do not lose a year of education for students.
Roy Douglas, that interview and all of the others are on our website. They are on your favorite podcast app, The Money Show. The Money Show is podcast each and every single day. Lots of you listening to it, and thank you for that. We really appreciate your support on that particular platform. Go and listen. Go and dip in. There's so much really lovely content. People are coming up with wonderful ideas and solutions, and then occasionally we have some fruity conversations because they need to be had. But hopefully what we're doing in this process is giving you a balance between the fact that this evening government confirming 1,170 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in South Africa. The growth was always going to be exponential. Don't let it panic you. This lockdown is designed to slow that down, to flatten the curve. That is why we're in lockdown. And you've survived day one of lockdown. You have. You've done well. If you've been naughty, be better tomorrow.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that has the bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity.
Welcome to The Money Show this Friday evening. We're suspending the biz quiz. It feels a bit, I don't know, wrong to be doing woohoo biz quiz. So we're not going to do the biz quiz for a bit. I think you'll understand. But instead, we're bringing you some of the best bits from around the world in terms of great journalism that we are seeing and that you don't have the time to source and read yourself. So from The Atlantic, I read, to fight a pandemic, governments are erecting barriers to the movement of people and goods, unlike anything since the end of World War II. In some ways, the new barriers are even tighter. America's borders with Canada and Mexico remained open during the war, but they're closed now. These interventions have been introduced as temporary measures. Globalization is suspended only for the duration, governments insist. But if we're not careful now, during the crisis, the duration will extend itself indefinitely. In the crisis, even the ideal of global cooperation is dying. The Trump administration did not consult with European allies, if allies remains the right word, before effectively suspending transatlantic air travel. The German government accused the Trump administration of trying to gain exclusive rights to Germany's vaccine research. Again, without consultation. France and Germany forbade the export of protective medical gear to Italy. Hungary and Poland unilaterally closed their borders. During the crisis, it's hard to think of the long term, but during a crisis is precisely when you must think of the long term. Otherwise, we may stumble into a future of perpetual national selfishness. That's a goodie from The Atlantic. Another piece from The Washington Post. In late February, countless Christians pledged to give up vices like alcohol, chocolate, and even Netflix for the duration of Lent. What they didn't know was, in the coming weeks, they'd also be asked to give up social gatherings, concerts, televised sports, eating in restaurants, and virtually every aspect of ordinary life. As the novel coronavirus has given new meaning to a season of self-sacrifice, some faith leaders are granting worshippers a pass from traditional Lenten rituals. On Thursday, Bishop James Cecchio, whose diocese in New Jersey includes 600,000 Catholics, announced he was waiving the requirement to abstain from eating meat on Fridays. Both the food shortages in grocery stores and the fact that people were already sacrificing so much had factored into his decision, he wrote, adding meat was still off limits for Good Friday. And then another one this evening is from The Guardian. And it's an idea that we certainly could use in South Africa. The Guardian is a UK newspaper. And architects have turned to shipping containers to make everything from pop-up shops to co-working spaces, even teetering towers of student housing. We've seen that happen in Joburg. But now the humble corrugated steel box might have found one of its most useful reincarnations yet in the hands of an international network of architects and engineers who have come together to convert them into two-bed intensive care units for the coronavirus pandemic. A group of us started talking a week ago, wondering if we could contribute our skills to this emergency, says Carlo Ratti, an Italian architect based in Boston, where he teaches at MIT. We know that there's a massive need for more intensive care units across the world, but there are problems with existing solutions, such as an official report from the Chinese government found based on their experience of the coronavirus. One current solution, he says, is to take a convention center and to fill it with lots of beds, creating a field hospital overnight, as is now planned for the Excel Center in East London. That's East London, the east of London in the UK, not in the Eastern Cape. There is efficiency in the numbers, but Chinese authorities found that problems were caused by the intense concentration of contaminated air, with the result that many more of the medical staff became infected. The second solution is prefabricated hospitals, kitted out with the full medical ventilation and negative pressure systems needed for biocontainment, but which takes several months to complete. We thought, is there any way that you can get the speed of a convention center or a tent hospital mounted in a few hours or a couple of days, says Ratti, but at the same time, having something that is as safe as a prefab hospital. And they're looking at shipping containers, and shipping containers have been used with great success in South Africa with so many applications. We've seen shipping containers as shops in urban areas. I don't know if we've got the skills and the capacity to start turning shipping containers into temporary hospitals. And also, when the coronavirus epidemic is over, you could then take these things and put them in rural areas. This could be the seed, potentially, of an NHI project. You don't hear anybody criticizing NHI at the moment, do you? But if we think differently, long term, as The Atlantic says, then we're thinking of creating solutions for the immediate future, and then saying, once this is over, and it will be over one day, we can then use those in other parts of the country. It's not a bad idea at all.